You know, with everybody on edge thanks to the coronavirus updates that are nonstop, I thought that we should talk to an expert on how to get through these tough times. Dr. Phil McGraw is joining us on the line. Hi, Dr. Phil.
Well, how are you? Good to talk to you.
Well, I'm good. You know what? I think we're all sort of experiencing something that we never thought we would have to, right?
Well, this is not something anybody had on the horizon, of course. We've all seen the movies that have been out about bioweapons and things like that, but for this to impact so many countries and then to be so pervasive, we've just really shut the world down at this point. Nobody was psychologically, emotionally, economically in any way prepared for something like this, and that's part of the problem. Is it's we're just not prepared for it, so we're a little bit in shock.
And this is one of those scenarios where we look to other people for our comfort and to be, you know, consoled and reassured, but yet we can't necessarily have that physical hug that we might need or that closeness. So it's really testing people's relationships in recent weeks.
Well, it really does. You know, anytime we've had a disaster in the past, you know, a hurricane or floods or whatever, everybody comes together, right? They bond. They, you know, they meet in the gymnasium. They have town hall meetings and talk about what to do. But here it's exactly the opposite. The social distancing is actually physical distancing. And so there's a great degree of loneliness that has set in with so many people. And that's a different challenge, because one of the things that really has bothered me, Jeremy, is that, you know, we're talking so much about this virus and what it does to our bodies and all, but nobody is really talking about the mental impact of this. And I am definitely concerned that the effects of depression, anxiety, loneliness, suicide, the stress, erosion on the body, all of this can accumulate to actually have its profound effect on overall health and even death count than the virus itself, because the connection between how the body responds to stress and these demands is not a speculation. It is very clear. When you're under prolonged stress, chronic stress, depression and anxiety, you are at much higher risk for everything from dementia with the elder population, to cardiac disease, to diabetes, to all sorts of diseases come much more prevalent. So, and we, of course, deplete our immune system, which makes us more susceptible to contracting this particular disease. So the mental emotional aspects of this are being greatly overlooked, in my opinion, and they have a profound effect on the outcome.
So what is the, I don't want to use the word trick or secret, but what is, I mean, like you say, we're battling the fears of not being able to pay the bills, you know, not going out and be near people. I don't want to go to the grocery store because I'll get sick and potentially die. I mean, how do we get through it mentally? What do we say to ourselves? What do we do when we're isolated like that?
Well, you're asking exactly the right question. And when you say, what do we say to ourselves? Because we as individuals and our bodies physiologically react not to reality, but what we say to ourselves about what's going on. And we need to be careful that we don't obsess with the media, because look, nobody ever goes on the news and says, today at noon, nothing happened at Third and Elm.
Right.
What they do is they report the news that is sensational, the news that gets people's attention. So there's a natural bias built in. They talk about the attention-getting aspects of this crisis. And the fact of the matter is that 85% of the people that get this disorder have mild to moderate symptoms. And they're going to have it and then get back to their life. What that tells us is that most of the people that get this disorder are going to have mild to moderate symptoms. They're not going to go to the hospital. They're going to be sick for 4 or 5 days. Then they're going to feel a little better. And within 10 days, they're going to be back to normal and back to their lives. So we can't think about this as being a death sentence. And sometimes our anxiety builds up to the point that our reaction is disproportionate to the threat. And I don't say that to trivialize or minimize this disease, because it should not be minimized or trivialized. It is a serious disease, and it has a much higher lethality rate than influenza. It's not as bad as SARS, but it's much higher than influenza. And we have to be careful what we say to ourselves. And we have these 24-hour news channels now, and it's so easy to just get obsessed with locking onto these channels, and you just hear death and destruction. And that's not the primary effect of this disorder. The primary effect is you'll be sick for a while and get back to your life. The reason we're shutting the world down is to protect that 20% that are at risk, the elderly people with underlying diseases that can make them so susceptible. We're doing it to protect those people, as well we should. Now, it does affect young people, true. There are deaths among the young people. As much as 12% of people from 20 to 40 are winding up in ICU, but it is still a smaller percentage. But we just need to be careful what we say to ourselves and deal with the facts and not hysteria.
Obviously, it's important for people to stay up to date with news and important, you know, public notices and restrictions or what have you. What's your recommendation for staying in the loop, watching the news once a day? What would you suggest?
Well, another great question. And I think there's two things that we have to do. Number one, we have to pick our sources very carefully. And I wish the politicians would just shut up. They do not know what they're talking about. They need to let the scientists speak. They need to let the physicians speak, the infectious disease experts, the public health experts do the talking and projecting, and stop trying to spin this for political reasons. So you have to choose your sources very, very carefully. And those are not politicians. Those are people like the CDC and the National Institute for Allergy and Infectious Diseases, like Dr. Fauci. He's the head of that. Choose your sources and focus only on them. And I think it's important that we limit our time getting information even there. You know, check in the morning, find out what's happening, and then check in again in the afternoon or the late afternoon or early evening. So you maybe check in 30 minutes in the morning and 30 minutes around 7 or 8 o'clock at night. And the rest of the time, we need to focus on other things. We need to focus on family. We need to focus on health. We need to focus on things that have nothing to do with this, so we don't become so obsessed.
We should be focusing on relationships with with our partners, with our kids. I know that you're also paying attention to divorces and trouble in relationships right now.
Well, I am, because we're seeing the numbers come out of China, and the Chinese culture and the American culture are certainly not parallel, but relationships are pretty universal. And I'm looking at what's happening in China, because they're just further down the road than we are. And we're seeing a tremendous spike in divorce petitions in China, because people are being isolated and forced to spend a lot of time together. And when you're under stress, you're under pressure, so you're worried and you're concerned, then that puts you on edge and you tend to overreact to things. So you're with your partner, and little things that maybe were kind of minor irritants to you before, now you're on edge, and they really set you off, and you tend to overreact. And so I think we do have to say, look, we're couples in crisis right now, and we're going to, I've seen a lot of problems because husband and wife see that the challenge different right now. Husband may not take it as seriously as the wife does, so she's nagging him to be more compliant with social distancing, and he thinks she's being controlling, and so they get into these problems and conflicts that they wouldn't ordinarily have if they weren't spending so much time together. We've adjusted our lives to X percentage of time together, and now we're 5X time together, and we're just not prepared to handle that. So I think the easiest way to deal with that is to sit down and acknowledge it and say, look, let's not pretend that this is natural. Let's acknowledge the fact that we are spending more time together than we're used to. We are on edge. we are going to get on each other's nerves. So let's just talk about it. Let's talk about how we can wire around this. You know, maybe we need to recognize we need to give each other physical space. We need to give each other emotional space. We need to agree that we're going to walk away. We're going to go over the rules of fighting fair. We're going to talk about how to actually manage this instead of just pretend that it isn't a reality, because it is.
The other relationship is parents with kids, right? You know, school is out, so the kids aren't in the classroom for so many hours a day, and parents are really having to be, I guess, full-time parents. What's the balance of parenting and becoming a teacher now?
Yeah, that is really a problem, because at home there are so many distractions. Home is where the kids usually relax and play, and now all of a sudden they have these homeschool curriculums, and they're bucking against it because they have so many triggers at home. And look, most parents aren't teachers. They're just not. I didn't have to do it, and I certainly wasn't a teacher. I didn't have the teacher's temperament, organizational skills for that sort of thing, and it's your own child. And I talked to a couple, it's going to be on a show that we air next week, that has four kids at home under 12 and an 11-month-old baby that is requiring some very serious surgery, and they're both out of work now, both isolated at home. Pressure is building. They have one computer and four kids in four different grades, and they're having to try to get all of their lesson plans and do all this homeschooling, and there's not enough computer time. There's not enough broadband. Bandwidth, there's not enough time in the day, and it's really creating a lot of stress and pressure. And what I say to parents is, we've got to enlist our kids to be more active in managing this crisis. Look, kids have arms and legs. They can pick up their rooms. They can make their beds. They can make themselves a sandwich. They can actually help in this situation instead of sitting on the couch playing a video game. We've got to enlist them. Instead, they need to be part of the solution instead of all of the problem. So we've got to realize that this is a new challenge for everybody. The kids are going to have to step up and help.
And finally, you know, we've seen some really despicable actions that people have taken. I know, you know, the toilet seat licker, and then the person who ruined all the groceries and the produce. Why do people do this?
You know, we really have a disproportionate percentage of this current young generation that are narcissistic, and I don't mean that to try and be ugly. I just mean, look, this is the YouTube generation, the TikTok, Instagram generation, where people think that they have to have an audience for everything. It's like they're brushing their teeth, they feel like they have to post it, and they measure their self-worth as a function of likes and how many views they get on something. And people have just lost their way in saying, look, I'll do whatever it takes to get attention. I'll do whatever it takes to get followers, to get likes, to get views to what I'm doing. And so they just have really poor judgment, and they just try to go more outrageous than the person before, thinking that it doesn't matter why they're looking at me as long as they are. You know, we used to say there's no bad publicity, but this is their version of it. It doesn't matter if they're clicking to hate me or love me, as long as they're clicking. And that is so wrong, because look, these young people, like you're talking about this toilet licker, I talked to her. The day's going to come where she goes to apply for a job or try to get into graduate school or something, the admissions committee or the HR department is going to pull up everything about her on the internet, and they're going to see this stuff and say, I'm sorry, we just don't want to be affiliated with somebody that has that poor judgment. They don't realize that this stuff is out there forever. It's terrible that they're doing this, but it's all to get attention.
So really, some people shouldn't leave their house, is what you're saying.
Yeah, some people should unplug. And I also think we should have a breathalyzer on computers. I mean, people ought to have to blow sober before they can get to the keyboard, because I'm sure it seems like a good idea at the time, about 2 in the morning sometimes, but it's sure hard to take back at noon the next day, isn't it?
Absolutely. Well, we're all having to adapt to this isolation thing. I know you're broadcasting from your kitchen, right?
I am, and you know, CBS came in, as they well should have, and said, look, everybody needs to shut down here. We have 300 people on our staff, and we had 500 audience members a day. They said, look, we can't do this. This is congregating, and it's going to spread this. And I agreed 100%. They said, look, we just need to call it quits for the year. And I, you know, what I thought to myself was, look, this is the biggest challenge that we've been in since 9/11. You know, the North American continent, and I thought, this is the last time that Dr. Phil should disappear. This is the time I need to be talking every day and helping people think through this and stuff. So I said, okay, I'm not very technologically savvy, but I sure have people around me that are. So I am shooting from my kitchen without one single staff member there. I'm using Zoom and iPhones and iPads and all sorts of things, and my staff is working from their houses around the town, and even some people in New York and Texas, and so we're able to do it. So it doesn't look great, but you know, I've never been under the impression that people are tuning in to see me. I look like an old catcher, Smith. they're tuning in to hear what I have to say. So it's working well. We're shooting from the kitchen and getting the message out. I think it's working okay.
Absolutely. It's much needed right now. And they're tuning in to see your gorgeous wife. Come on. I mean, that's...
Yes. She does mess up the frame, I'll say that.
All right. We're going to be watching. We always love the information, Dr. Phil. Check your local listings, everybody. Dr. Phil McGraw, thanks so much for joining us. Stay safe out there.
Jeremy, thank you.